Wait a minute. Let me get CB on the line. We're green lighting it. It's a go. It's a go.
And I want full air support. I want tanks and some fire throwers. And I want explosions over here. And I want planes going. That's gotta be cool.
Are they gonna bust in here and arrest us?
It's crunch time on 95.3 The Score.
Hello. Thanks for tuning in. Thursday is upon us. We've got action, action. We want action. ACT. ION. Got NFL and MLB starting about the same time. Kansas City at Denver. Chiefs hoping to snap a two-game losing streak. Hope their quarterback's healed up, get back on a bit of a roll. Houston with Zach Greinke at New York's ace. Masahiro Tanaka. Yankees in pretty much must-win mode. We've got college foosball tonight. We've got a Pac-12 matchup on ESPN at 6 that a few weeks ago looked way more attractive. Now it looks like a couple of North and South also rans, to say the least, with UCLA down on the farm, or in their case, up on the farm at Stanfried. As for what we have up our sleeves,
nothing.
Do we have to tell? I'll never tell. 3:30, Aaron Fentress of The Athletic, who's going to get to do the media version of a double dip. Ducks Huskies Friday, Ravens Seahawks on Sunday. That was last week. Lightning round at 3:45, Jerry Thompson of Ducks Illustrated at 4:30. Some talking trash, some worthy talking trash, I think, at 4:45. The new Ducks Illustrated is out. Great shot of Jalen Redd, that 13-yard dart for Justin from Justin Hebert. Called Red Zone Successes. So we got that going for us, which is nice. If you'd like to participate, 284-8571. Your Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline on the text line. It's 321-0824. On Twitter at 953. The Score for the station, for the show at Sports Talk 953. At Rick Rodgers for Nick Rodgers. I didn't realize I saw Steve Mims' article today in the Registry Guard. 80% chance of rain in Seattle. And I don't know what that means. Aside from it'll rain and it'll be wet. Washington's got a good offensive line. I haven't seen an update on Nick Harris, their all-conference center. He missed last game. But when we talk with Tony Castrononi, I'm giving him the name I want him to have.
That's the wrong name, Steve.
Tony Castricone. Said he expected he'd be in there. I mean, between, you go center outside with Harris, Jared Hilbers, who's a Beaverton kid, Trey Adams from Wenatchee, and, Jackson Kirkland, even though he's a sophomore, he's a guy who's really highly thought of. I guess for some reason, I think of rain, I think, well, it'd be nice to have a good offensive line to open some holes. And I think both teams answer the call. Both teams have good defenses. The odds makers like Oregon. I mean, they've got them a 3-point road chalk, so they probably like them about 5. 12:30 kick again. What was the other story that was making the rounds today? Oh, man, this is nuts. So, a freshman at Alabama, he's accused of a bomb threat. So, Saturday night, LSU is playing Florida, Florida. I know. I just know people who've said,
you need a coffee?
Florida.
You've yawned 19 times in 3 minutes.
It just hit me how exhausted I am. I usually don't get up till about 7:30, 7:45. I had two dogs that are staying with us that were vocal at about 6:20, and I never got back to bed.
I was also up at about 6:20, but I mean, I also had a lot more coffee today than I think I normally do.
Yeah, I had one cup.
Oh, you can never. How do you only have one cup of coffee? That's insane.
Because normally, especially a night where I was a normal person and I watched a little of Van Pelt and was probably asleep by 11:25, 11:30.
Oh, too late. Got to go to bed early. Got to get those 8 hours. 9 hours, 10 hours if you can.
Getting to bed before midnight, 1 in 4 shot, maybe. I have always been a night owl. I have always, oh, by the way, turn around real quick, because we're going to talk about this in a little bit, because I got the highlight.
I have a question about it, too.
So the dude's name is Connor Bruce Kroll. Why do people who do crazy things, do we always have to learn their middle name? Unless they were like an 80s and 90s child actor. I think all three of them on the Tool Time with Tim Allen, I think they all three went by their Jonathan Taylor Thomas and Freddie Johnson Johansson and Ingemar Frederick Dombrowski. I don't know what the hell their names were. So this knucklehead was arrested and jailed, referred to as a fugitive from justice. So according to WBRZ in Baton Rouge, here's why he called in the bomb threat. Folks, this is a new one. A friend was on the verge of losing a large bet. So what if you call in a bomb threat, do they tack 7 points on to the team you have? No more details available. But first of all, how much of a dumbass are you in this day and age? I mean, don't you even watch TV? Movies. It's like as you're calling, it's you have the overhead satellite shot and it goes whoop 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 whoop. That idiot. I mean, it takes like 7 seconds to pinpoint where your dumb ass is on planet Earth. And you know, Alabama, whatever. He was identified within minutes and arrested soon thereafter. And I like this one dude is like, well, it was a prank. Yeah, because threatening a bomb in a stadium full of, Tiger Stadium holds like 80,000 people.
I think it's 90.
Well, by the way, threatening 80,000 people versus 90,000 people. Wait. Was it 90? Yeah, you're good.
10,000 people is a lot of people in that case, you know?
Especially if you're one of them.
That's true.
So, details not available.
Also, going back to that incredible sound you made of a satellite zooming in to find a person, if that's what technology sounded like, actually, like, beep, boop, like just very comical, like weird sounding sound effects instead of the ones that you get in like every science fiction movie, which is just a whole bunch of just like
right
enhance like that. That's kind of like over the top and creepy and nobody's typing anything and all the keystrokes don't mean anything. It's all fake. It doesn't matter. But if a computer like was able to speak out loud and go zooming in, zooming in and locating. There's the idiot. There you go.
Moron alert. Moron alert. First of all, every time I think of that, the satellite overhead, I think of the Will Smith movie where
Wild Wild West.
No.
iRobot?
No. Probably 15 years ago. Where he was on the run, but they kept finding him because of the not collateral damage. How I always joke and say we need to talk. I'm not mad. I'm disappointed. I'm disappointed in me
Come on, Steve. Be better for you.
I'm looking. I'm trying to cheat here, and it's not working. So it was after Men in Black, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Somebody hook me up here. It was an espionage movie. Enemy of the State. Boom. Count it. See, there's reliability, then there's our audience. And you kept getting the overhead shot, and you kept seeing him running away. And I was like, if that movie was made X amount of years after, he'd have just got wasted by a drone. But because they had to find him at that time, he was able to. And by the way, like in a movie like that, Will Smith's not going to get away and be a hero. So, and first, for it depends on your generation. What is the voice of Big Brother technology trying to search for you? Because first we had HAL from 2001, A Space Odyssey, and it's like, what are you doing? And it's just like very subtle, very calm. It's like Richard Pryor used to say, when my wife used to get very calm and explain things to me, and it was very eloquently put, I knew I was dead. No, 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 honey. You sit down. You have a bite to eat. Maybe take a nap. And it was like, I'm going to die in my sleep. And then we upgraded to War Games, and it was, shall we play a game? The winning play is not to play. And, you know, what was her name? Ally Sheedy and Ferris Bueller accidentally trying to start World War III with the Whopper system, and Joshua in particular. Did you ever see that movie, by the way, War Games?
No.
Oof. You know, I think it stands up pretty well for its time. Just, he's a computer geek in the 80s, and, you know, he had a computer, which you'd probably refer to now as a CRT. And what he used to do is, he'd cut school, he'd be a jerk to his teachers, but then he would get sent to the principal's office, and when no one was looking, he knew where they hid the code. So he would get, and it was like pencil or something, he would hack into the computer and change all his grades. And then one day, he accidentally hacked into a place in Sunnyvale, California, and he wanted to play all of their new games, and all of a sudden, you see guerrilla warfare, and he's like, global thermonuclear warfare, and he's playing it, not realize he had hacked into like the Pentagon or NORAD's system, and you know, there was actually a threat, and we were taken to the brink of war. Huh. And as I don't have to tell you, there was a whole big to-do about it. They were kind of the...
Really, they didn't think that some kid wanted to just play a video game.
Yeah, right.
It always has to be something more, huh?
Who are you working with on the outside? All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. By the way, somebody in the Will Smith movie about espionage, somebody actually texted, you've got mail. That's very good. That's very clever. Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan before she got the clown face. Meg Ryan in her heyday. Meg Ryan had a surgical procedure, and she looked like she... I'll tell you what. You look at Meg Ryan immediately after, and you look at maybe Jack Nicholson as the Joker. There's a lot of similarities. I am not saying that for effect. Anyway, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Matthew Broderick, War Games, great movie. I like this. Went on one of his first real dates to see War Games. So did you go on fake or practice dates before then? Although I gotta be,
there are fake dates. There's
I gotta be honest with you. Sometimes you know, you go with a group, you really like her, and in your mind, it's a date, and in her mind, nah, it's just a bunch of us going to the movies. Yeah. All right, I gotcha. I gotcha.
Yeah, there's the high school group thing where it's like you're trying to talk to her, and you're like, you wished it was a date. No, I wished I had asked her to see the movie, or we could sit next to each other, but it's not a date, or you want to, you like...
And the senior shows up, and...
Yeah, you're just walking
she's
home.
She's more into him. It's, damn it.
Had a lot of those in, like, junior high. We'd walk from junior high to the shopping center, and we were probably technically loitering, but we'd go to Starbucks and then the Shave Ice place all the time, and you'd always try and sit next to the cute girl, and you'd talk to her for a little bit, and it felt like a date, but it was never a date. But it got you ready for the actual dates.
Which,
I'm still waiting for my first.
I was just going to say, I can't wait to go on my first real date. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline, if you'd like to jump on in. So this was kind of interesting. Federal lawmakers were on Capitol Hill, and now interest, the story from Dan Murphy says, interest was picked in finding new ways to compensate college athletes.
Peaked?
Yeah, I know. P-I-C-Q-U-E-D.
Picked.
So one of the Republicans, Mark Walker from North Carolina, he has proposed legislation would make it possible for all U.S. college athletes to accept endorsement money as early as a year from January. So first he wants to change the federal tax code, which would prohibit the NCAA and the schools from requiring college athletes to sign away the rights to their own name, image, and likeness. And then Mitt Romney got involved, now a Republican senator from Utah, and he was very pointed in his commentary. The reality is Congress is going to act. We're coming for you, NCAA. Okay. And Walker said what I actually believe. What happened in California, and Governor Newsom signing the legislation into law after it easily passed through the assembly and another branch of the California government, is I believe what Walker said, that what California's done is it's basically lit a fire. And at the end of the day, we discussed it prior to the Congress, going on leave. They just reconvened Tuesday, and they like to operate on their terms. And usually, the NCAA moves along at what I've often referred to as glacial movements. But bottom line is, others are now kind of chiming in. There's a representative from Texas, a Republican by the name of Kevin Brady. He is also the ranking member of the House Ways and Means Committee. And the bottom line is, because the proposal represents an alteration in the tax code, the first step through the legislative process would be Ways and Means before it could be voted on by the full House and Senate. Could you imagine something like this? All of a sudden, Congress, the House of Representatives, and, you know, our what's the number? 435 reps and 100 senators. So 535 members of Congress, plus, I guess, the executive branch. And even though California's law is not scheduled to go into effect until 2023, The group is expected to review the findings, and that's another thing. The NCAA is like, well, we're looking into it. Yeah, and while I'm not necessarily well-schooled enough to say, well, this is right, that's wrong, we've got to kind of fine-tune this, but I will say this. I don't want to wait around for the NCAA to have a group and then to put together another group and then say, well, we're looking at it and we've got another group of stakeholders which is examining this. And it's like, I don't trust the NCAA as far as I could throw a 700-pound boulder left-handed. So
throw it uphill or downhill? Is it more of a push maybe?
Yeah, maybe a push.
Is a push a throw?
Maybe. Now, there's another guy, a Democrat from Louisiana, Cedric Richmond, who is co-sponsoring the tax code proposal. He says they're hoping the NCAA would find their own inner angel and propose a better way. And like he said, look, this is the point. The NCAA has proven they have no willingness to address this, and that's where we'll leave it. So we've got Congress trying to push the NCAA. We've got a young guy whose friend is losing a bet, so he threatens to bomb 90,000 people at Tiger Stadium.
Which, by the way, is a lot worse than the guy who losing the bet. Even he wasn't so desperate as to think, I need to have this game canceled. LSU needs a minute to reconsider. Or I need, you know, Florida to catch up here.
That was it.
His buddies just kind of like, yeah, hey, let me help you out here. I've got a couple bones on this one, too. But let me help you help me by helping you. I'm going to go do a thing.
I got your back. Really? What are you going to do? Don't worry, I got you. You did what? You didn't say my name, did you, you moron?
Oh, God.
By the way, you were right, and you were actually off by as much as me. I said I thought Tiger Stadium held about 80. But you know what? I live in the past once upon a time, but it's probably been renovated and upgraded in the last 15, 18 years. It's 102,000 is the capacity. Well, you know, when I used to work in the billing and collection industry, you learn that, you know, if you bring small claims is up to X amount of dollars, then it jumps a little bit. You know, there's petty larceny and grand larceny. And, you know, if you threaten 80,000 people, you know, willing to look the other way. You get to 100,000, you've got to be stopped. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Remember, tomorrow being a Friday, we'll hit you with a Friday Duck Talk, sponsored by Bi-Mart. I'll be down at the IHOP at Gateway talking a little bit about last week's dominating Oregon performance, taking a peek-a-loo at the Washington game. My special guest will be Brent Haberle, who's a linebacker on the Duck team from 2004 through 2006, had the huge scoop and score, providing the margin of victory against Arizona during their 10-1 regular season in 2005. See what he's up to, a Cottage Grover. And you're more than welcome to join us down there at IHOP. And they offer free duck pancakes for everybody who shows up for Friday Duck Talk. From 8 to 9, it's on our Big Brother station, 96.1 KZL. It's brought to you by Bi-Mart. I'm your host. And remember, catch all the action. All Oregon Duck football games are right here on KJZ. All right, take a break, come back, have an update, talk some Ducks, talk some Seahawks, talk some Mariota with Aaron Fentress of The Athletic next. 95.3 The Score.
Today's show is brought to you by the Coors Light Frost Brewed Sports Desk, your home for the Coors Light scoreboard and the refreshing tweet of the day. Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
But I would love to see him somewhere else with just a new fresh start, and I think that will help him. I just think he got bogged down with the pressure of trying to fulfill something each and every year and trying to be that quarterback and just trying to will his team to victories. And sometimes he's done that. He's had some exceptional games with the Titans, but overall it just kind of felt like it just wasn't all the way there.
That's Victor Cruz, former Giant receiver, now an ESPN analyst. Terrific guy, very well spoken. Why is that? He's from the same town as me, Paterson, New Jersey. Born in the same hospital, Barnett Memorial.
Same schools?
I don't know. I'm not sure if he went to Eastside or if he went to another one. But we fled the city. In 1968.
And rightly so.
Yes. Paterson, New Jersey was one of those inner cities that you heard a lot of sirens and a lot of bad stuff went down in the late 60s. It was the site of the framing of Reuben Hurricane Carter, the boxer, you know, the movie with Denzel. And then they revived Paterson, and downtown became fabulous. And Patsy's, if you ever... Patsy's Pizza up around 21st Street in Paterson. They got the mussels. They got some of the best pizza on the East Coast. But neither here nor there. I did take Nick's advice as I was starting to nod off during the first segment of the show. I decided, caffeine, baby! All right, as we reach the middle of hour number one today, we take a moment and... we get the proverbial view from the north. Ow! He's going to get a sports media twofer. Saturday, Ducks Huskies. Sunday, Ravens Seahawks. Keep up with what he's doing at The Athletic. His Twitter handle is at Aaron J. Fentress. And remember, subscribe, support quality journalism. Mr. Fentress, how's it going?
Good, man. What's up?
Not much. Loving life. My favorite time of year. Helps when the Yankees are in it. You get NBA almost started. You get baseball's playoff. You get conference play. The NFL. It's a beautiful thing. So, let's start with that Mariota fella. He gets benched for Tannehill, and it's caused the debate among Oregon fans versus NFL fans versus lunatics. I always say, my theory is, I love the Ducks, but I've been an NFL fan for 50 years. Once they leave here, they're no longer my responsibility. You know, you follow this really close. Tennessee, what moves they've made, drafting receivers, it hasn't worked out, the coaching carousel. So what do you make of Vrabel benching Mariota?
How long is this segment?
Well, as long as you keep it interesting, I got till 6.
Okay. Look, everyone who's ever come in contact with Mariota likes Mariota, right? He's a great kid, good guy, always respectful. One of those guys who's just extremely likable. But you know me, I don't pull my punches. I tell it like it is, you know, for better or for worse. If Mariota was brutal, I would say so. Like, I would just tell the truth. Like, I didn't think Darren Thomas would be a good pro. I had reservations about Dixon. I didn't think Vernon Adams would make an NFL. I liked all those cats, too. But I just feel like Marcus is absolutely getting screwed here. And so what I did is I went back and I watched these last two games, the all 22 film, right? We can see everything, but the pass rush, as the receivers, are receivers open before the pass rush develops? Does he have places to go with it? And I just defy anyone to go to these last two games and tell me how they fell on Mariota's shoulders. Like, there's no logical reason for him to be absorbing the blame. Now, when I looked at Tennessee, he did have three bad passes, like Delanie Walker in the flat, he missed. Travis Henry, he missed on a screen, just a bad throw. And then he had an out, they kind of short hop. It was a weird throw. But those three plays would have accounted for 20 yards max.
Right.
Right? Those aren't going to change the game. The rest of the time, there is either he's hitting people, because he didn't complete some passes, obviously, or I swear to God, there's either no one open or no time to throw it to anybody or both. And again, I'm asking anyone on the planet to show me differently. And these are plays I've watched 5 to 10 times, and I tweeted a bunch of them in a string of succession yesterday, just showing it. Like, who's he supposed to throw it to here and throw and get it to someone within 2 seconds because now he's being sacked? Now, there was the second interception, though, was hideous. Like, he had a guy wide open in the flat to his right, and he could have dumped it off to him. He got pressure, tried to step up, and then tried to just make a play. It looked like he was almost desperate. Like, I'm just going to throw it up here and hope for the best. He didn't lead the guy enough. The DB made a pick, and that's when he got benched. So here's my problem with that. That was his second interception of the game. It was also his second interception of the season.
Right.
You have to go back to the Miami opener last year to find the last time he threw two interceptions in a game. And those two came after he injured his elbow and had numbness in his arm and couldn't grip the ball. Remember that?
Of course.
Yeah, so he injures his elbow, comes out, tries to play because he's Marcus freaking Mariota, and he can't feel the ball and throws a pick. Comes out the game, is like, I want to try it again. Goes back in there, very next pass, throws a pick. They're like, okay, dude, you can't throw. So his first actual real two-interception game where he didn't, like, have numbness in his arm came in December of 2017, 23 games ago. So what you're telling me, Vrabel, is that this kid threw a second interception for the first time since December of 2017, and that was your last straw, while you were watching him either A, run for his life, B, get crushed, or receivers covered all over the field for the majority of the game. Now we go back to Buffalo. So then I'm like, okay, well, let me go check out Buffalo. So I watched the Buffalo game from start to finish, same thing. And it's the exact same game. There's either A, no time, or B, no one open, or both. Now, there's one play specifically where he had a man on his left, wide open on a hitch, and he didn't see him. Bad play, Marcus, you missed it. But every quarterback's going to do that. You're not going to be perfect. You're not going to make every read. He also had three drop passes in that game. So, again, I defy, and he threw no picks, but I defy people. Show me in that video where he left plays on the field. The other part of this is that these two games came against two of the very best defenses and pass defenses in the NFL. Buffalo has allowed three touchdown passes all season, and they destroyed Tom Brady. Tom Brady against them a couple weeks ago went 18 of 39
yep.
for 150, no touchdowns in a pick, not sacked once. Marcus, 13 of 22 for 183, zero touchdowns, zero picks, which is better, not good, but better, while being sacked five times. Buffalo only has 12 sacks on the season. Five came against Marcus, and I'm telling you that maybe one might have been his fault. The other four, not his fault. So there were two specific plays where Marcus got the snap, and the right guard just got destroyed. And so all of a sudden there's a D tackle right in his grill. There's nothing you can do. If someone comes off the edge, you can run away from them, or it takes a long time to come off the edge and get you, so you usually can have time to maybe get off the ball in a quick pass. If a D tackle pretty much comes free up the middle, you're screwed.
Done.
There's nothing you can do. And that happened twice. Denver's allowed only four touchdown passes all season. This is one of the best pass defenses in the league. So, in conclusion, what I'm saying here is this is a guy coming into those two games who had seven touchdowns, no interceptions, was being sacked more than anyone in the league already, got sacked eight more times, had no one open, no pass protection, the running games were marginal at best, some drop passes in one game, and then when he throws his second pick, it's like, oh, I've seen enough, I'm going to blame it on Marcus and yank him. Now, here's another part of this. Tannehill did come in and have some success, but his success came because it was late in the game, Denver was winning, and Denver started changing his covers a little bit and playing off more and giving up the 10-yard out. So there's a couple completions where the 10-yard out guy is just wide open. And Marcus wasn't getting that, except for the one he did short-step. I do admit he made a bad throw there. But once Tannehill had some success and Denver clamped down and began pressuring him more, they sacked him three times and he threw a pick. So it's like, what are we saying here? And again, I just have to say this again. Because I covered Marcus, I'm interested in this. If this were Rosen, if this were Josh Allen, I wouldn't care enough to go watch the 22. I'm not going to lie. So I care enough to go check it out, but I don't care enough to lie or defend him if he's beyond being defended. I think he's getting jacked. I think Vrabel doesn't know what he's doing. I think the offensive coordinator was a tight ends coach last year, never been a coordinator before. I think he's in over his head. I think they're having trouble scheming guys open. I think they have average to good receivers who aren't great at creating separation in tight situations. And I think Marcus has no time, and I think these guys are freaking out, and so they're going to blame him and roll the dice and hope to God Tannehill can maybe bail him out. And if he doesn't, they'll go right back to Marcus, because that's on the trajectory they're on right now. Everyone's getting fired at the end of the year. If you're a coach and you know you're going to get fired, you're going to try anything, Because if Tannehill gives you some success, then you can always say, oh, well, it's always Marcus. Marcus was the problem. Let's get rid of Marcus. And then you have an argument to keep your job. So anyway, that's my spiel until someone else. I challenge people on Twitter, bring me something different. You know, I
get it.
Just jacked up. And I want him to get out. I would take him to Chicago and man, I think he's way better than Trubisky because he doesn't turn the ball over. Now, I should say this. He does have a fumbling issue at times, but pick-wise, he doesn't throw a ton of picks, and that's where you start, for me, with a good quarterback.
All right. Now, see, what you're doing is you're using...
I didn't take a deep breath.
Yeah, you're using facts, film, and proper NFL analysis because you don't live in Eugene where I deal with people. I deal with people who act like they grew up tailgating with mom and dad in Nashville and were like big Houston Oilers and Tennessee Titan fans. And I don't, you know, you go back generations with the Bears. I saw Namath play. I saw Tarkenton at Yankee Stadium. And I'm getting these people who telling me, I'm like, you're really this invested with this crap franchise. And so that's my angle. That's what drives me nuts.
So what are they saying, though?
Oh, first of all, they're agreeing with you, but half of them haven't watched most of the games. They just hear, you speak bad of Marcus, we want you killed.
Oh, yeah, well, that's a given. I mean, Marcus is the adopted son of anyone who's ever won a Ducks jersey on or off the field. Like, that's just how it is. So the emotions get the best of people. But here's what I'll say. As maybe emotionally reactive as they are, they're not wrong. They may be getting there the wrong way.
Yeah.
Support their emotions. I mean, this franchise, I mean, look, they drafted him with Wisenhunt. Wisenhunt has had success in the past. He's been to a Super Bowl with Kurt Warner in Arizona. He's a proven guy in terms of operating offenses at the NFL level, and Marcus was having some success, and they blew him out. And part of the reason I remember was that they thought maybe he was exposing Marcus to too much harm or something like that. Well, how's that working out for him? He's been sacked 25 times this year. So then you go to Mularkey, who's a run-first guy, and I'm cool with a young quarterback. You know, you want to protect them. So running first, I think, is fine. And they had Henry, and they had, from Dallas, the running back, DeMarco Murray.
DeMarco
Murray.
And
they were killing it. And that worked, and they won a playoff game in Kansas City, right?
Right.
And then the next year, they were doing well, and Marcus breaks his leg. And so he comes into the next season, he's not quite, and things kind of go off the rails a little bit. But they, Mularkey leaves, they bring in Rabel. Well, who the hell is Rabel? Like, how did he become a head coach? And then who's he? The offensive coordinator he had last year ended up being the head coach at Green Bay. Well, Green Bay's passing offense is off to its worst start ever with Aaron Rodgers, I believe. So how's that working out? Although they're winning because they're playing good defense and they're running the ball, things that the Titans are not running the ball very well. So I just feel like Marcus is not ever going to be a Hall of Fame caliber quarterback. I don't think he's there, but I think he's good enough to win with if you don't have a pile of garbage and dysfunction around him. that's just my belief.
No, that's good. And like you said, I figured if as long as you're making sense and it sounds good, I just let Fentress go on and on and on and on. One duck thought. We talked, the consensus was kind of, yeah, the defense looked great, but Nevada, Montana, Cal, Stanford. And then all of a sudden we were talking like, well, Colorado with Montez and Chenault in a running game, and they score 3 points. And I get the Ducks still have to go to Seattle, Tempe, USC, more stern tests await. But based on another game, how impressed are you with the Duck defense?
Okay, so I pride myself. And I thought about legally changing my middle name to Caveat. I try to always find the caveat to things. And part of that comes with, like you talked about, you remember watching Tarkenton and Namath. Well, I remember Namath his last year. Like, I remember him playing against the Bears in the 70s and getting killed when he was, like, with the Rams, right?
Right.
I do remember Tarkenton, though. My first Super Bowl ever I watched, I remember watching, was Vikings Raiders. Tarkenton just getting destroyed by the Raiders and Jack Tatum nearly killing Sammy White, right? So you and I can remember that. There's a lot of people right now going, who the hell is Sammy White? But that experience in history gives you frame of reference for things, right? And so we've seen teams look good for a while, then all of a sudden they play a different level of competition, they fall apart. right? We've seen that so many times in our life. So for me, that's why I always have these caveats. And people think, oh, you're seeing negative. No, it's because I've been here, done that before. So what I wanted to see was this team play against a veteran quarterback who's smart, who's got an NFL-caliber arm, who's an NFL prospect, and he's got some talent around him, and they've had success offensively. And that's what we got on Friday, and Oregon just pip-slapped them. Now, I mean, just smacked them around like they were a junior high school football team. And that's just a fact. And so now that I've seen that, I can step off that caveat for the most part and say, you know what? These fools are good. And now I would be surprised to see them go the other way. Had they given up 20, 30 points on Friday, I wouldn't have been shocked because Colorado is legit offensively. But now the narrative changes, and it's like, holy crap, I can't see UW scoring a ton of points on these guys because Easton is so up and down. I can't see USC. What are they bringing to the table? What are they, 3-3 right now?
Right.
Khalil Tate can't throw. Just keep him from running it. You got that. Washington State, I mean, they're struggling. They still are a threat offensively, but I see Oregon handling them. So right now I'm like, there's no team on the schedule that I'm looking at and believing, based on what I've seen, should give that defense any trouble. Now, that could change. You never know. But my entire perspective on Friday night was completely shifted to, oh, my God, these guys are good. No one wants to play them.
By the way, as a Bears fan, you should know, in case it ever comes up, if you're ever on Sports Jeopardy, it's a trick question of who caught Joe Namath's last pass. It was against the Bears. It was an interception. It was Gary Fencek in 1977. Oh. He got benched in favor of Pat Hayden, never played again, and retired. So
that was the Monday night game I'm talking about.
Absolutely. Absolutely. My heart broke.
I remember watching that as a little kid.
Yep. All right, Fentress. Good stuff. Now everybody realizes where we stand on Mariota. We've got analysis and facts to back it up. I would say have a good time this weekend, but I think you're going to see two good games and two telling games as well. So always appreciate the time. Enjoy the Emerald City, and we'll catch up next week.
Yeah, it should be fun. I got Oregon 27-17. How about that?
27-17.
I need to get 17 at home.
All right. Have a good one, man. Take it easy. All right. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's take our break. We'll come back. We're going to have to be an accelerated lightning round next. 95-3 The Score.
We're riding the waves of technology just for you. You can call the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline at 284-8571. Text 321-0824. Tweet Steve at SportsTalk953.
You've lost two straight home games, and now you're coming up against a divisional opponent in Denver Broncos who's also won two games. So the Kansas City Chiefs, their defense, they can't stop the run at all. Their 30th in rush defense. Phillip Lindsay is getting back on track. So, and the Denver Broncos defense is playing pretty good football.
Pretty good. Talking about tonight, that would be Damian Woody saying the Chiefs got to win this game. All right, this is going to have to be quick. So we wrap up Thursday Crunch Time with this.
You'll have to excuse my friend. He's a little slow.
Luckily, I have prepared for such an event. The Lightning Round!
Welcome to the Thursday Lightning Round. I've had my coffee now. I can settle down because when I'm watching the Yankees and the Astros later on, I won't be settled down. So let's get to the Lightning Round.
I was thinking like you were so excited about getting into it and getting through it because we're at the top of the hour, and then the music is so slow and it just killed the whole vibe of everything. Ken Rosenthal of The Athletic and Fox Sports reported this morning that the Yankees believe the Astros were reading signs and relaying that message to hitters in a sonic fashion. The Astros, not afraid of controversy, as just a couple of years ago they had their own sign-stealing controversy that had to do something with a camera in the dugout, the film, the coaches, and then help them steal the signs and pass it on. But now the Yankees are accusing the Astros of doing the same thing, but passing the message along with whistles. And according to Major League Baseball, that is illegal, but no official in the dugout, not so much an official, but just a dude in the camera well, nor the umpire said that they heard any specific whistles coming from the visitor's dugout. Sign stealing's always been a part of the game of baseball, and clearly when you're using technology like the Red Sox, who had a bench coach using an Apple Watch, that might be too far, but the Astros haven't been afraid to try and steal signs already in the postseason, and it is just a whistle. That can't be too technologically advanced for baseball, right? The Astros being accused of sign stealing is a big little or no deal.
No deal. Sour grapes. Get a friggin' hit when it matters.
We know about the problems that the NFL has had plaguing their NFL officials the past couple of weeks. The story of the offseason with Saints-Rams, and it got even more Monday Night Football during Lions-Packers. These are just two singular games that had a lot of attention and a lot of eyes on them, but it's not just the primetime game. Penalties are up across the league. Tom Brady, you know, that alien who keeps getting younger as he should be getting older and is going to play football long after we're all dead, even he tweeted out there were too many holding calls, and like magic, I tell you, holding calls the next week went down. But across the board, penalties are still up. Yards per game per penalty are up. And the more and more that the NFL add rules to protect players, they're creating more and more penalties that are harder and harder to call. And the guys are just getting faster. And all the good officials are getting pushy, plushy TV jobs that are just a million times less stressful than actually being an NFL official. And now the officials are younger and inexperienced as ever. So the NFL officiating problem is a big little or no problem.
Right now, it's a little problem. If it's not addressed properly and they don't tweak and stop with these outside holding calls or improper reviews, it'll grow. But right now, it's not negligible, but it is a little problem.
Call your own fouls. Back to baseball. The Nats are going to the World Series, which seems just as strange as saying the Cubs are World Series champions. But even beyond that is the incredible feat that Fernando Rodney is one postseason appearance away from accomplishing pitching in literally every round of the playoffs in both leagues. That's right. In wildcard divisional championship and soon to be a World Series, Rodney's appeared in them all in the American and National League. The 42-year-old has been around baseball for 17 years, shooting his arrow into the night sky. And thanks to a trip to the World Series in 06, he will pitch for the World Series in the World Series not only for two teams but in two leagues as well, not to mention a couple All-Star games and a World Baseball Classic. So Fernando Rodney pitching in the American League Wildcard Divisional Championship, the NL Wildcard Divisional Championship, and the World Series is blank.
It proves there is no God and that people who cause ulcers and misery get rewarded. Fernando Rodney drives me nuts. He has for years. I used to get on his case before I worked here, and I've been here 11 years. In the world of ulcers, he's what's known as a carrier. That guy drives me batty. All right, we'll take a break. We'll be back. It's the 4 o'clock hour next. Sports Talk 95.3 The Score.
What are we talking?